for Neal. Far side, dusts it off, gets into the slot, shoots and scores. James Neal, the Jets killer, off the post and in. It's an overtime winner for Nashville. Final score, Nashville 5, Winnipeg 4.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Beware the Ides of March, gentlemen. Good evening to you both. Joel Marcoux on my far left, Ezra Ginsberg right between us. Good
welcome
to see
back,
you,
Drew.
Both. Thank you.
Bracket time.
I got my bracket all filled out. You guys got brackets filled out?
Not yet.
Oh, not yet. Got to get in. You got to get in Hustler's pool over there.
Yeah. Well,
You don't have to. I've already won it.
Yeah.
I've already declared myself the winner of the whole thing. I can trash talk a little bit if you don't mind. But anyways, yeah, big
you
bracket
Coach
time.
Coach K's crew or what?
No, come on, man.
Why not?
Because I'm not a Duke fan, I'm a Kentucky fan.
It doesn't matter what the fan, it's all about going for the win.
Well, and Kentucky's going to go for the win.
Here we go. Okay.
There's no question about not Coach K's team. The Duke was underachieving all season long, only until the last, you know,
peaking at the right moments.
Yeah. It's Duke, they'll choke. I'm not too concerned about it.
Remember the Elamine game back in 99 when they lost to UConn?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, that was the most heavily favored team in a decade.
And they couldn't pull
Elton
it off.
Elton Brand was on that
team.
Trajan Langdon.
Yeah, they had a great team. And anyways, I'm not too worried about Duke. Kentucky, they're going to win the championship.
Yeah.
They take care of Northern Kentucky first Friday night. Then they'll move. I mean, they have a tough bracket because they got Wichita State number 10. As he's telling me to hurry up with this because he doesn't want to talk about
it's
NCAA.
It's a hockey show. Let's go.
I know. He doesn't want to talk about the NCAA basketball. But in any event, you're absolutely right. It is a hockey show. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. Sort of a bizarre situation. They were supposed to play 3 in 4 nights, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Tuesday's game obviously postponed in New Jersey due to the snowstorm.
Stella.
Yeah, isn't that what they called the snowstorm? Stella,
yeah.
Streetcar
yeah,
named
Stella.
Desire, that sort of thing
yeah,
going on there.
Exactly.
But we start, of course, we'll talk about a bit about Tuesday, but we'll talk about Monday to start with. The loss, the 5-4 overtime defeat to the Nashville Predators on Monday night in Music City, USA. It was a Jets game, I would say, that all fans have seen a number of times over the last number of years. Start strong, early lead, give up the lead, end up losing in overtime. I mean, you can't give up 5 goals. You can't have that kind of defensive performance. I know Trouba's out of the lineup and everything else, and expect to win on any sort of consistent basis.
Yeah, Drew, it was a fairly even game, and Patrick Laine almost won it for the Jets there with that unbelievable individual performance, and Pekka makes the big save. But as you talked about, we've seen this story before. The Jets get out to their early lead, and you know Blake Wheeler scores in the power play. Dustin Byfuglien gets a beautiful goal with a beautiful assist by Nikolai Ehlers, and then Nashville ties it up. But again, the defensive zone coverage was not good enough.
Awful.
Mm-hmm. The Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Brian Little line was great offensively, but defensively, a couple of times these guys were burned. Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers both were burned. So I mean, they could have easily won the game, and it doesn't really matter much at this point in the season because we know the Jets aren't going to the playoffs unless
clearly
there's some ridiculous mathematical
they win occurrence. All their games, and the teams in front of them lose all their games.
Right, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, from that perspective, I mean, it was a great effort from the Jets, and as far as Connor Hellebuck's performance, a lot of the focus, Joel, has been on the fact that he let in 5 goals, but maybe with the exception of one or two of the goals, maybe Austin Watson's goal you want to have back, but certainly the other 4 goals I didn't think were necessarily Connor Hellebuck's fault. I thought it was more a function of the way the Jets were playing in their own zone. But again, you know, you bury one power play opportunity, and then you give the Nashville Predators an opportunity in overtime. And most of the time, any team is going to score in overtime when you have the extra man. So again, it was a disappointing finish.
Yep.
A pretty entertaining game. You had Sean Matthias chucking the knuckles
sure.
There with Cody McLeod. But again, it's kind of the same old story for the Jets.
Let's just go back to what the captain said post-game. You score 4, you shouldn't be losing the game. And they've done that now 4 times in the last 8. They did it against the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
They put up 5 against the Maple Leafs. They did it last week against the Pens. When you're scoring 4 or more, you should not be losing a game. But I guess they don't want to stifle creativity, right? But I guess giving up 5 that night, the common denominator as to what you said about the lack of defensive zone coverage was number 5. A lot of blown assignments out there by Mark Stewart, and I'm not going to blame him. Of
right.
course not, because he's playing more minutes than probably they'd want him to be playing anyways.
Yeah.
But as team defense, and then, of course, with the final two guys on the back end right in front of Connor Hellebuyck, the assignments were just really bad out there. Cross-ice passes and, you know, going for the block and biting on it a little bit too early. That last goal to tie the game, Byfuglien really bit on that cross-ice pass, and Johansson just put it right in there. So I don't know what direction they've been wanting to go into. We heard him a couple of weeks ago say that we don't want to stifle creativity. That's why we haven't been preaching defense first all the time. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure what that means, because playing hockey starts with defense, and then if you can actually get the puck out of your own zone properly and transition properly, that will lead to some better offense. We hear Mike Babcock talk about it all the time with the Maple Leafs right now, that Nazem Kadri is playing a better brand of hockey because he's better in his own zone, and he still has, what, 25 goals? So just because you're taking care of your own zone does not mean that it's going to roadblock your offensive creativity. So I'm not quite sure.
These guys don't have any answers. I think at this stage of the season, you know, with having played 70 games, you got 12 games to go, they're not going to find any answers at this point. The next 12 games are about as meaningless as you can get.
Yeah, and even if somebody gets on a heater, what do we make of it, right? It's dead time hockey. Garbage, whatever you want to call it. Garbage time.
You can't take anything out of it as something to build. I mean, people were like, well, okay, you know, because the Jets, what did they win? The last three games of the season last year?
Four, whatever it was,
when they went on that California road trip and they took them all. You can build on this. You can't build on it.
No.
These games are, they're as meaningless as they come.
Well, they're meaningless in the sense that the Jets aren't going to the playoffs, Drew.
Right.
But you'd rather win these games and play the right way as opposed to not playing the right way.
Right.
So you can build on it in that sense.
Right. You could have done that in November.
And that, sure, but we can't do anything about that now,
sure,
right? So we're here in March, and you know the Winnipeg Jets have to start practicing what they preach. And you know, you mentioned if you score four goals, most of the time you should win.
Yeah.
But if you play like that in your own zone, and you had missed assignments, and you had, with Ryan Johansson's goal, a two-on-one, because there was, I don't know what Julian Melchiori was doing there.
Play,
you know, Buff was left on a two-on-one. But you have to start playing better defensively, because you are really playing for next year at this point. Because that's all you're playing for.
But it's been like this all year. I mean, the defensive zone coverage has been bad all year. So why are we talking about playing the right way when you're at game 72 or wherever they're at right now with that snow day game?
You're not going to learn. Exactly right. And it's not even all year. It's been last 5-6 years where they've been talking about having to play the right way.
Yeah, that 99-point season, though, a couple of years ago, they played that kind of brand there where they weren't giving you an inch. They weren't better than you skill-wise, but they were skating so hard and on you that they weren't giving you a chance to do much as an opposition, right? So they were kind of squeezing you.
They had an identity, and people still think that's the same identity. Big, physical team. It's not.
No, it's different, even though a lot of the same players are here.
Right. But at least you're right. When they made the playoffs, you knew what you were going to expect to see from the Jets night in, night out.
Yeah.
What you're seeing this year is, they have tremendous offensive capabilities, but their defensive game isn't just bad. It's more than bad. It's bordering on, you know, woeful or embarrassing how they play. And to play NHL hockey that way in your own zone on a semi-consistent basis is really troubling, and it's more than just personnel, I think. I think it is, as they said on the TSN hockey panel, and I keep going back to that, because for the most part, the analysts that we see on TV, they couch their words pretty carefully. They don't want to burn any bridges necessarily by speaking truthfully all the time. But when they say that the Jets have the worst, besides the Colorado Avalanche, the worst defensive structure in the entire NHL, that's a pretty damning statement.
Well, and that's the area that if it doesn't improve, I'm not talking about the last 12 games of the season, I'm talking about next year and the year after, then you can score 4 or 5 goals a game, but you're not going to be a playoff team, right? So we know that the goaltending has to be better, and most likely that has to be addressed in the offseason, either via trade or via free agency.
Agreed.
That commitment to team defense, and the young players, Drew, don't get a pass. In my opinion, Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine have to be better. I mean, on that goal by Mike Fisher, by the way, that was a beautiful goal. I mean, that was not Connor Hellebuck's fault. He makes a beautiful move, but he has way too much room there. And Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers, you can actually see themselves kind of looking at each other on that goal, because they're like, oops, who's got Mike Fisher there, right?
Yeah.
And you got to be tighter there. And doesn't matter if you're out of the playoffs at this point.
I agreed.
That's something that, sure, you could chalk up to these guys being in their first and second years. But if the star players don't have that same commitment to defense, and those two guys are the star players of this team now. I realize Wheeler and Scheifele and Little are more of the veteran star players. But let's be honest here, Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers, there's a lot expected out of these guys as far as what they're going to do with this team, right?
If they have bad defensive habits, or they learn bad defensive habits, it doesn't bode well for the future. Those guys aren't right. going to be your defensive shutdown players.
Which is why I don't understand the comment of how we didn't want to stifle creativity, and that's why we didn't want to squeeze too much defense into them right away. Isn't that what you want to do in their first couple of years, is try to condition them to think a certain way and tattoo it on them? So that this is how you think the game. This is defense first, and then the offense will certainly come anyways.
There's more than one side to the game.
I agree. They're not going. At no point in time do you want Nikolaj Ehlers, truthfully, at no point in time do you want Nikolaj Ehlers to become a Selke Award nominee.
No, and I'm not suggesting.
But you want him to at least know what's right and what's wrong in the defensive zone.
I'm not suggesting these guys become like Yuri Lettinens and all that kind of stuff. It's just more so defensive awareness in your own zone so that in turn it can lead to better transition and better scoring opportunities, right?
Yes.
That's usually the way it works. You have to sacrifice just a little bit in order to maybe get some more on the offense, and that offense will start to taper off if you don't take care of your own zone anyways, or you're just going to lose games anyways. Pick one or the other.
And that was my point, Joel, right? I realized that, I mean, these last 12 games are going to be pretty tough. Because, I don't know if you look at sports club stats, not that I do on a regular basis, but
you know enough to know it's over.
It's less than 1%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Jets aren't going to the playoffs this year. So they really do have to focus on those details. Because I agree, you're not playing for next year, Drew, in the sense that you're playing for points in the standings. Because obviously, standings and points don't carry over. But it's just the way you play. I think you got to have pride in the way you finish the season.
But
because I realize the fans out there, all they want is a higher draft pick, right?
Sure.
They'd prefer the Jets get the third or fourth draft pick.
Well, they prefer to get Patrick in the first. But
as opposed to
they want more balls in the ping pong container.
But just for, I think, the team's psyche and what they want to accomplish going forward, I think they really have to tighten up defensively. But again, Drew, we've been doing this show on the station for 6+ years.
And had the same conversations for 6+ years.
Right, so I mean, again, you got to practice what you preach.
What's the difference between this team, and it's a bit of a rhetorical question, but the difference between this team and the team, you know, this team's performance and the performance of the team when Claude Noel got fired?
Well, certainly not a heck of a lot. The only difference is, if you look at the roster,
there's more talent on the roster.
There's more punch there, for sure, right? Yeah. Where this punch brings you, who knows? I mean, these guys are all fledgling players that you hope turn into stars, but nobody's got a crystal ball here.
The same defensive problems, the same breakdowns, the same structural issues, the same it's the same topics. I mean, I can go back and I can probably pull out a show plan from, you know, from mid-March 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when the Jets were already out of the playoffs, and we're talking about the same issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's astounding that it continues to be.
You go from young
year
to,
after year. The players have changed to some extent. Some of them are still the same. And we're going to, I mean, Chris Thorburn and Mark Stewart, who are still part of the Atlanta core, or whatever, probably are going to shuffle off this offseason. I don't think that there's much of a future for either of them
in the organization. Yeah, but Chris Thorburn, Drew, and Mark Stewart are not the main parts of the Atlanta core, right?
Of course.
I mean, it's Bufflin, it's Wheeler, it's Little, it's Enstrom.
Yeah.
And I agree with what you're saying, by the way. We're talking about the same things. And it's one thing to be beaten by a better team, like the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, they beat the Jets 7-4. They're a better team. But when you're defeated last night because of mistakes that you make or coverages that you miss, I mean, that's something that is a systematic issue. And I also think that it's something for the Jets coaching staff to look at, that maybe the way they currently play is not sustainable.
Well, the thing is, you talk about the better team, and I agree with that for sure. The Pens are, they might win another cup this year, but that year that they put up 99 points, they played a brand systematically that put them in a position to win every night, whether they were playing the top team in the league or not. Just the way they played systematically gave them a chance to win every night. They didn't really get blown out that year a whole lot of times, and also they never really had these skids like what we've seen this year, where they go lose two or three in a row every couple of weeks.
Well, that the year they made the playoffs, the biggest skid they went on, if I recall correctly, was right after the All-Star break. They were flying high. I think they were a top 10 team in the league entering the All-Star break, and then they came out from the break and they lost 5 or 6 in a row.
Sure, yeah.
And that was the biggest skid of the year, and then they had to battle back to still make the playoffs after that.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, Joel. It's the system. The fact that the system makes the play. I mean, is the system too complicated? Is the system too easy? I mean, and I don't know the answer to that. But
is it not executed properly?
Or is it an execution?
But to that end, where's the accountability?
Where's the critical thinking?
Where's the, well, how come this guy got benched? Oh, you know what? He wasn't following the system. Boom. Perfect. Great answer. Because that's exactly what you like sometimes seeing when guys are being taught something. You're not executing it properly. You're going to ride the pine for a little bit.
I remember the Bombers. This is going back a number of years ago, maybe 4 years ago. They had a linebacker. We're going to go to break real quick after this story. They had a linebacker who finished a game with 12 tackles, maybe 14 tackles. Great on the stat sheet. They cut him right after that game, or the next couple days, because he played his own system. Yeah. He went for his own stats and said, "Screw the system," and he hurt the team, but his own numbers looked good. Food for thought regarding how this system is being implemented and adopted by the players. Let's head to break. When we return, we'll come back and look at tomorrow evening's game in Long Island, pardon me, in Brooklyn, as the Jets and the Islanders will do battle. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Hosang over the Carolina line, drops for Tavares, down the spot, shoots and scores! The captain, John Tavares, wins it in overtime! His ninth career overtime winner, and they are mobbing number 91 on the ice!
John Tavares wins it for the New York Islanders last night. They come back. They defeat the Carolina Hurricanes in a must-win game for the Isles. They move back into a playoff spot. They hold the second wild card spot in the Metropolitan Division. It's getting real tight in the Metropolitan Division. Tied with the Tampa Bay Lightning, but by virtue of having more regulation and overtime wins right now, the Islanders hold that spot. Do you see how they celebrated? By punching each other? That was pretty funny.
Yeah, John Tavares gave Jason Chimera a punch. I didn't see, were there other players?
I think
that
was about it. He gave him a good shot in the face after Tavares scored the goal. But this New York Islanders team, who the Jets will face tomorrow, and the Jets make their only visit into Brooklyn, and they haven't seen the Islanders since that New Year's Eve debacle at home when they got blown out by the Isles.
That game was absolutely atrocious.
There's been a lot of atrocious games this year.
That game was brutal. Like, all of the fans were just excited to see a big Jets win, because at the time, as you mentioned, the Panthers were struggling.
Islanders.
Pardon me, the Islanders were struggling.
Panthers are still struggling, but you're right about that.
Well, they won last night.
There you go.
The Islanders were struggling, and the Jets just, was a no-show.
I mean, 4-on-7 on Hellebuck, I think.
Yeah, and Ladd scored. It was just brutal.
I think the Jets played what? I think they've played now 4 Saturday night home games this year. If I recall correctly off the top of my head, they won that one against Colorado, which was a laugher. The other three, this Isles game on New Year's Eve, the 3-0 loss to the Lightning and the 3-0 loss to the Flames.
Right.
When you're stinking it up on home ice in front of a national TV audience, more often than not, it's really emblematic of the season the Winnipeg Jets have had.
Yeah.
And where the level of enjoyment and going to some of these games is really at.
Was that Habs game on national TV?
That was a Wednesday night, not a Saturday night. No.
But that was another beauty.
Yeah, that was another beauty game. There's been some real stinkers this year. In any event, the Jets go into Brooklyn tomorrow night to face the Islanders. Jets, of course, just sort of playing out the string, but these games with 13 to go for the New York Islanders are tremendously important, as they have dug themselves out of a terrible start to the season. They've been absolutely on fire under still interim head coach Doug Weight. And lo and behold, this New York Islanders team, after finally advancing to the second round of the playoffs last season, they're right now on the cusp of the playoffs, in a playoff spot as we sit here with 13 games to go.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned Doug Weight. Since Doug Weight took over as Isles head coach, the team is 16-8-3, which is absolutely incredible. And what I find fascinating about this Islanders team is I think the expectations were lower than they were last year, and that's because they lost some good players, right? They lost Franz Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
They lost Kyle Okposo. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost some good players there. And Andrew Ladd was struggling earlier in the season, and now he's started to play a little bit better. But when you look at this Isles team, I mean, the goaltending is still not good.
Nope.
And
the
goals against, they've allowed the most goals, 211 goals the Islanders have allowed, which is the most in the Eastern Conference, and I believe the fifth most in the entire league.
I think they're still playing catch-up, though, after the first 20 games of the season. They only had 6 wins, and some of those got pretty ugly, for sure. But yeah.
And, Joel, they're right in the thick of the playoff race, but, I look at this team, and it's still a flawed team. I mean, I like some of the players. I mean, John Tavares is John Tavares. He's a top 5 player in the league, but, the goaltending is still an issue, and now they're talking about possibly possibly calling Yaroslav Halak up from the American Hockey League, but if they were to get into the playoffs, I think you might as well just give Doug Weight the Jack Adams Trophy right now.
Really?
Would you? You would actually give him the Jack Adams Trophy?
Well, he's you got to probably
you got to give him some
give
votes
him some
at
consideration.
Least. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, that Islanders team looked like they were out of it.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'd written them off. They were the worst team in the league. I mean, I'd written them off as just a lost year in New York. People were beginning to talk about the future of John Tavares in New York. There was some of the circumstances around the arena where they weren't sure if they were actually where they were going to end up playing, and they still don't really know where their long term future is, because it seems like the Barclays Center isn't going to be the option. And you're right, the goaltending, Thomas Greiss has been okay. He's been okay. I mean, he's got a 914 save percentage and a 265 goals against average.
Drew, Greiss has allowed three or more goals in six of his last 10 starts.
He's been okay. I mean, he's been, how about below average, but compared to the other goalies, the best of their options.
And worse is that Berube has also struggled.
Yeah, Berube's got a sub-9 save percentage and a goals against of over 3.4. So
That's not good.
No, and so really it is time to call up Halak. If you're the Islanders, I'm not sure what you have to lose by doing so.
We'll have to ask Arthur Staple, because he's absolutely tearing it up in the American Hockey League. He's been very good. So you wonder, if this team keeps winning and, they lost to the Carolina Hurricanes and then beat the Carolina Hurricanes.
8-4 that first game.
Yeah, and then they won last night in overtime. So you wonder if maybe they call up Halak. But certainly, I mean, this is still a team that is heavily reliant on scoring goals, and that has never been an issue for this team. I mean, we know they can score goals, so it's going to be an interesting team to watch. I still think, I've told you this now for a month now, Drew, I think the Lightning are going to get that last playoff spot.
And they're the two teams, along with the Maple Leafs, that are really battling for that last playoff spot.
And they're just starting to get a little bit healthy, too, right now.
Well, and
that's a scary team if they get in.
I don't think it'll come as a shock to anybody when you finally hear, Steven Stamkos' return.
Yeah.
When he's back in their lineup. The question is, you're absolutely right. Will it be too late? Are the Islanders going to be able to hold off the Lightning as they get closer and closer? I'm going to be talking about the Lightning coming up at the top of the next hour, where we're going to be joined by Josh. Fill me in. Corey Long. Sorry, I don't know why Josh came to my head.
Probably thinking of Josh Hosang.
That's exactly where I was going to go with that. We're Josh Hosang, who was sort of a controversial selection when he was, I think he was drafted at the draft in Philly, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And, all the talent in the world, sort of a bad attitude, bad reputation.
Got sent home during camp last year.
That's right. And he's been tearing it up for the Islanders since he's in their lineup. He was on the ice with Tavares, set Tavares up with that winning goal last night. So that's just almost a trade deadline acquisition.
Yeah.
That's tremendous for a team that's sort of not lacking in talent, but lacking in some elements of top line skill.
Right. And due to injuries and due to the fact that they've had some struggles in their top six, there was an opportunity for Josh Hosang to be recalled from Bridgeport, and he was almost a point per game with the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in the AHL. And it's been a really good story. He's got 6 points now in 8 games. As you mentioned, Drew, he was drafted late in the first round back in 2014 in Philadelphia. And if you remember correctly, not only were there issues with Josh Hosang at the pro level, at the junior level, he thought he should have been more part of Canada's national junior team.
Right.
And, he kind of, I wouldn't say made a bad name for himself, but he definitely stirred up some controversy with, let's say, his confidence in himself.
Based on skill, I think he should have been part of the Team Canada, junior contingent, but he didn't play by the Team Canada rules, quote unquote.
Well, and there's also a lot of good players, and it's tough to make that team every year, right? So we don't know if it was more so his attitude or his skill set didn't fit in with the team. But
I think attitude played a significant role in it, definitely.
But there's no doubt, Drew, that he's got all the talent in the world, and he had that talent in the Ontario Hockey League, and some people thought he could go as high as top 10 in that draft, and he ended up going late in the first round. And, he's wearing 66, and, he's a very noticeable player, but it's been a really good story because he's really helped out for the Islanders. He's been chipping in timely goals. So this Islanders team that's gone a little bit younger here, and they've had some turnover in their forward group and basically at every position, they're right in it. And I didn't think they would be, but give Doug Weight a lot of credit. He's got them still in it.
He absolutely does. Quickly, before we have to head to break, any reason, can you give me one reason, one good reason, why they're replaying that Jets-Devils game? Is there a more useless game on the schedule that needs to be replayed? I mean, besides the greed of NHL owners and not wanting to have to refund the few ticket purchasers.
Well, mathematically, the Jets are not eliminated, right?
Fine, but back at the end of, by the end of March when they're playing that game, they'll be mathematically eliminated by that point in time,
yeah,
likely.
I've kind of wondered the same thing, why they do that sometimes, especially when both teams are up, but there's probably bonuses related to games played and all these points. And you know, if you all of a sudden just take a game away, that could create a little
controversy.
They
do it in baseball.
I know.
They do it in baseball when there's a rainout late in the year and both teams are out of it. They just say, scrap it, you know, we'll give the fans a refund, or we'll let them pick a new game next season, whatever it might be. But the fact that they're making the Jets fly for, in the midst of a homestand, or in the midst of, I think, they're off for 3 days, that they're flying to New Jersey to play quite possibly the most meaningless hockey game in the NHL calendar is quite amusing to me.
Drew, the last time the Devils won a hockey game
was
February 18th. It's March 15th.
So it's been almost a whole month.
And it was against the Islanders.
Well, there you go. It's all coming full circle then. Is that what you're saying?
It's been a rough year to be a Devils fan.
And you are a Devils fan. Let's head to break. Arthur Staple of Newsday is coming up next. He covers the Isles. We'll talk to him more about the Jets' opponent tomorrow night. You're listening to the NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mundell, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That website is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Arthur Staple. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's always ours. You know, Arthur, I look back to the last time the Jets and the Islanders met, and that was back on New Year's Eve, because where else to spend a lovely New Year's Eve than in beautiful Winnipeg? And the Islanders at that point in time were certainly not a playoff team. They were struggling. Coaching was in question. Obviously led to Doug Weight being hired as the interim head coach. And here we are today on the 15th of March, and the Islanders are in the second wild card spot. From your perspective, how surprising has this comeback been by the Islanders this season?
It's been pretty surprising. I would be hard-pressed to find even a lot of diehard Islander fans who thought they'd be in the position that they're in, essentially controlling their own fate over these last 13 or so games. They obviously had some okay moments in the first 40 games or so, one of them being that New Year's Eve day game in Winnipeg. But they were very inconsistent. They were, not generating enough offense. They were giving up a lot of shots. Their D-zone play was a little bit scattered, and their goaltending wasn't very good. And it was kind of a lot of little things that added up to a very mediocre team that was maybe didn't deserve to be in last place in the Eastern Conference, given that lots of teams were maybe overachieving a bit who have kind of come back to earth now. But certainly they didn't deserve to be in a playoff spot. And they started their upswing a bit right around that time. And 2 weeks after that, Jack Capuano was fired. Doug Weight took over. And really they've kept on going. I think while we were in Winnipeg, they solved one of their issues, which was putting Jaro Halak on waivers and really anointing Thomas Greiss as the number one goaltender. He's kind of gotten a bit fatigued lately. He started, their last 10 road games out of the last 11 overall, and he had to come in and play the other one on Monday against Carolina and Brooklyn. But he's been pretty good and rewarded with an extension. That's been a big help, and I think just a few of the minor changes that Doug Weight has made in their defensive zone has kind of prompted them to play a little bit faster and play a little bit more on offense and with the puck a little bit more. And I think just the message, hearing the same voice of Jack Capuano, whether it's fair or not, for 7 years, got a little stale, and I think the firing was was definitely a big wake-up call to a lot of the longtime guys who have been here, and made them realize that, you know, nothing is secure, really, just having won a playoff round for the first time last year in 23 years and playoffs 2 years in a row, that they obviously had to get themselves back going, and they have to a certain extent.
Arthur, you just mentioned Thomas Greiss. He's allowed three or more goals 6 times in his last 10 starts, and then J.F. Berube has allowed at least 4 goals in 3 of his last 5 starts. How concerned are the Islanders with their goaltending right now, and what would you say the chances are that we do see Yaroslav Halak called up from Bridgeport?
I think they are concerned, and I think there's a pretty good chance you're going to see Halak back here. You know, there was certainly plenty of talk outside the Islanders organization that Halak was available at the trade deadline, and that teams were interested. But I don't think Garsneau had any desire to move him. You know, he's been playing pretty well in the AHL, as you would expect a guy with his pedigree to be able to do in the AHL. And I think this, you know, maybe you're looking more at an injury scenario, but also a scenario where Thomas Greiss is starting to show a little bit wear and tear of playing a lot, and J.F. Berube was still a fairly unproven commodity, and he hasn't been very good when he's played. So I think Doug Weight is leaning more on Thomas Greiss than maybe he would have thought he was, given the volume of the schedule over the last month, and certainly with the next month to go. So there's still a few back-to-backs, and there's still a few situations that they're going to need another goaltender. And I think that's why Yaro Halak is still in the organization. And I would not be surprised at all to see him come back and play some sort of role down the stretch, which certainly the way that it ended for him in December, and after, you know, his agent popping off on Twitter and Halak himself popping off a few times, and then in Minnesota, his last start where he was pulled, not speaking to reporters, not speaking to his teammates as he left the rink. That's kind of, I guess you can never say you burn your bridges in the NHL or in any pro sports, but it would not surprise me at all to see him back and see him figure somehow in this chase for the last playoff spot.
Who's been playing the role of unsung hero throughout this turnaround?
You know, I'd give it to a couple of different people. You know, I think that top line of John Tavares, Anders Lee, and Josh Bailey, you know, John Tavares isn't going to be unsung anything. He's obviously the guy that makes the Islanders go, and he's certainly at times taken his game to another level. But really the constant talk over the last few years of the Islanders have to get John Tavares an elite winger or two elite wingers to really make it a true top line. And I think Josh Bailey's been there on his right for pretty much the entire season, and he's got a career highs in assists and points. And Anders Lee has come on 25 goals to match his career high and really erase a kind of dismal season last year. These guys really fit well with him. You know, Bailey is definitely more of a distributor, and Lee is kind of that prototypical power forward who parks himself in front of the net and can kind of sweep up rebounds and take up a lot of space. And I think it just works very well with Tavares' style of game. He's not your typical, you know, super skating creative superstar. He's a guy who kind of digs and works for a lot of his points and goals. And I think having a guy with, you know, like Lee on his side and to help him kind of dig around in the corners, and a guy like Bailey to facilitate a lot of plays really has worked very well. And I think, you know, possession wise, they've been, close to 60% since Wade took over, and just very consistent top line. So I think those three guys for sure have really stood out over the long haul. And then you've got guys like Nick Leddy, who I think had a slow start to the season, who have been really good. You know, the guys like Ryan Strome, who struggled kind of mightily in the last year plus under Jack Capuano, has felt a little bit more free, I think. So these are guys that have always been important for the Islanders, but maybe getting back to the way that they've played the last couple of years has really helped a lot.
Arthur Staple, our guest on NHL This Week. Arthur covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper, discussing the Isles ahead of the Jets' visit to Brooklyn tomorrow night. Arthur, Josh Hosang, a lot of conversation about him as of late since he's entered into the Islanders lineup. He had a great year at Bridgeport at the AHL level, 36 points in 48 games. So far, 6 points in his 8 games as a member of the Islanders. A guy who sort of had some controversy surrounding him, you know, in his time in junior and his battles with Team Canada, you know, in terms of the junior hockey management, and he was outspoken. you know, are you surprised? How impressed have you been? Let's put it that way. How impressed have you been with his performance since getting into the Islanders lineup?
He's been incredibly impressive to me, and I think to a lot of his teammates too. He's really, you know, jumped right in, and not just jumped right in and eased in, I guess, at the beginning of a year like some rookies get to do. He's jumped in the middle of a playoff race, playing an important role, playing, you know, 13 or 14 even strength minutes a night for a team that's got to win pretty much every night they go out there. And he doesn't look out of place. You know, his first game, Dallas lined up their top line, tried to get them out there against his line a lot. The next night in Chicago, he's looking across at Artemi Panarin and Patrick Kane. And his skating has really been on point. You know, he's able to keep up. He's probably made a couple of decisions that were, you know, like a lot of young players, plays that he had probably had more time to make either in the AHL or in junior that, you know, you're going to get closed out quickly in the NHL. And I think he's learned very quickly that you got to move the puck quick. You got to move your feet. He's been responsible defensively. I think, you know, Doug Weight has really set off in these eight games that he's played. There's no reason to keep him on the bench late in the game if it's close because he's doing everything that's asked of him and, you know, showing a little feistiness. He's not backing down even though he's still a very slight kid. And really just playing a creative style that the Islanders haven't really had for a long time. And you watch him out there and he really is a dynamic player, doing a lot of things that I think even he didn't show in the preseason. So, you know, maybe he's one of those guys that is a little too fast for the AHL game, and the NHL game suits him a little bit better. He's certainly been all as advertised so far.
Arthur, Dennis Seidenberg has the best plus-minus on the Islanders at plus 25. Considering that he signed for 1 year, $1 million, do we have to consider Dennis Seidenberg to be one of the best value signings in the league right now?
Well, I think that number helps my argument against plus-minuses ever being used as a real statistic ever again. But it definitely has its limits, plus-minus. And obviously, you know, once you get up into the – if it's plus or minus up in the 20s or down in the 20s, then I think it's indicative of something. But he's been good. He's been good. He's been a very reliable guy. And I think the thing that he's shown that's really helped them defensively is just his instincts about when to pinch and getting shots through. He's just a smart, savvy guy. You know, you hear those cliches about guys like him who've been in the league a long time, but he really, you know, he makes up for what he's, you know, having lost a step being 35 or 36 with just smart decisions. And I think, you know, early on it seemed like everything he touched either ended up in the net or someone else put it in the net. I think he had 17 points over the first 30 some odd games. And that was obviously a bit out of whack, but he hasn't looked out of place. And, you know, I think there's a lot of Islander fans that are clamoring for some of their younger defensemen to play more. But really, you know, the Islanders couldn't be happier with their addition, you know, adding him after the World Cup, after he showed, you know, that he certainly still had the ability to play in the NHL. And he's been a good stabilizing influence. The Islanders have tried over the years to add that type of player, the veteran late signing, whether it was Marek Zidlicky last year, Lubo Vishnovsky a couple years before that, Steve Steos, and they haven't always worked out, whether it's injury or just age catching up to guys. But really, in the role that they need someone for, Dennis Seidenberg has done well, even though the plus number, as great looking as it is, isn't completely indicative of the way he's played.
Arthur, how's this team's relationship with Brooklyn?
Not great. Not great. You know, the fans still love this team, and obviously, you know, it's still taking just a second year in Brooklyn, takes some getting used to for the, you know, the fans who commute to the games. And I just think team and the landlord have really, you know, fought a lot over many, many different things. You know, this recent 9-game road trip that covered almost 3 weeks was, you know, the longest in franchise history, and another indication, I think, to the team that they're not considered to be a high priority when it comes to scheduling and things like that in Brooklyn. That, you know, I think this coming Saturday after Winnipeg's here, Columbus plays an afternoon game. That's the only one of two or three Saturday games they've had all year. And that was always their, you know, kind of a bread and butter for the Islanders at Nassau Coliseum, that the fans got used to coming to games on Saturdays. So, you know, it's, it's a situation that's not great, and obviously there's been lots reported about the Islanders wanting to leave or Brooklyn wanting them out. You know, I think they're going to be there for a couple more years. There's really not a lot of other options right now. There's no new arena for the Islanders to move into, and even if Brooklyn wanted to kick them out, that would still be a couple years away from happening. So I think there's a lot of posturing and a lot of sore feelings on both sides, but this is a relationship that's got to continue for the next couple years. So we'll see where it goes, but it certainly hasn't been the best this year, and I think if the Islanders miss the playoffs by a point or two, they're gonna you know, frustratingly point to this, you know, the imbalanced schedule where they played so many more home games than road games at the beginning of the year and didn't get a ton of fans, didn't perform particularly well, and really didn't hit their stride till later in the year, and then they were stuck on the road for most of it. So that's certainly not going to help matters, I would imagine.
Arthur, we'll let you go on this last question. You reported earlier today that the 2018 NHL Winter Classic is likely to be held at Citi Field, home of the New York Mets. But, you know, the Rangers will be a team. A lot of people might think that it would be the Rangers and the Islanders, but it will be the Rangers and the Sabres. Why not the Islanders in this game?
You know, I imagine, I certainly didn't hear from anybody from the NHL about this story, but so I can only go on, you know, what we know about TV ratings, and obviously the Sabres are, despite their record the last few years, the Sabres are still a big draw, and you know, TV wise, and I think you know, Rangers Islanders, they, when they played in Yankee Stadium in the Saint Stadium series in January a few years ago, I don't think the TV ratings were so great. That was obviously a year that was kind of saturated with outdoor games, and that was a weeknight game, not a special game on New Year's Day. But you know, I think part of it is also the Sabres hosted that first Winter Classic, and this is the 10th installment, and it's kind of a way to honor them and keep them in the loop on the Winter Classics. But the Islanders just are not the hugest draw. I know their fans feel like, and I certainly experience this quite a bit on social media and in person, they are an incredibly passionate group, and the Islanders as a team and myself as a reporter certainly appreciate that. But this is more about TV ratings, you know, and obviously you see teams like the Bruins are in it regularly, the Rangers are in it regularly, the Flyers, the Penguins, the Sabres, teams that are, you know, U.S.-based teams that draw very well on TV and in person, and, you know, I think that's just kind of the foundation of it. It would be great locally if it was Rangers-Islanders, and you know, as Newsday has reported elsewhere, the Wilpons, who own the Mets, could be involved in helping finance a new arena for the Islanders at Belmont Park Racetrack, which is just over the New York City border in Long Island, and that would certainly be an interesting piece of the future to have a different sport team involved with the Islanders. But I think as far as the Winter Classic and the NHL goes, they go by what they know and what they have in hand, and those are, you know, the Rangers and the Sabres. Certainly the Rangers are a huge draw, and the Sabres, I think, maybe to some people's surprise, there are a pretty huge draw as well, TV-wise. So that kind of explains that, but I don't know how much solace that'll be to all those Islander fans out there.
By the way, Arthur, with 19 goals and only 8 assists, is Andrew Ladd going for the Cy Young Award this year?
I think he's got some competition from former Islander and Manitoba Moose star Michael Grabner, who I believe is 27-12 right now. But yeah, Andrew Ladd is one of those guys that's really picked up his game with Doug Weight in charge, and you know, he kind of recharged his batteries, I think, the week that Weight took over. Ladd was out with a back injury, and he's kind of been managing it since. But he's looked a lot more like the guy the Islanders thought they were getting when they shelled out, you know, $38.5 million over 7 years for him, and you know, and the guy who I think had one goal in the first 20 games for them. So yeah, he's been shooting the puck a lot, not necessarily playing on a line with guys that contribute a ton offensively in any sort of consistent way. But yeah, it's definitely been back to what they thought they were getting, and I think he's certainly maybe had some pressure taken off with the goals he scored, and obviously the coaching change maybe as well, that didn't feel like the world was coming down on him the way it was the first half of the season. So I think, you know, this is a guy who's going to be here a long time, and obviously they need him to produce and need him to be a leader, so they've seen a lot more of that lately.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Yeah, do it again soon. Thanks very much, Arthur. We'll go to break, and when we return, we'll discuss, should the NHL publicly release the list of players who are protected ahead of the NHL expansion draft.
Yes.
Thank you, Ezzy. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, big thanks to Arthur Staple for joining us to discuss the Islanders, the Jets, into Brooklyn to face the Islanders tomorrow night. Jets looking to play spoiler in their final 12 games of the regular season. No doubt a disappointing season for the Jets, for their fans, for anybody associated with that franchise. Some good spots. Patrick Laine would be up at the top of that list, but ultimately a disappointing season. Still to come on the program, Corey Long going to join us. He covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for NHL.com. And Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News going to join us in the second hour. A lot of talk, gentlemen, at the general managers' meetings that the list of players who are protected and who are not protected by each of the 30 NHL teams ahead of the NHL expansion draft. A lot of talk that list won't be made public. Is there any league, quite like the NHL, that can take a great opportunity to get excitement, in a generally down time for the league? End of the season, beginning of summer, before after the cup finals, before free agency? Is there any other sports league that would take that opportunity and just say, nah, we're good. We don't need the publicity. We don't need fans getting excited to see which teams were protected, which teams value their players more than others? Any reason in your mind why the NHL would say we want to keep this list quiet and confidential?
Well, they've always been boring like that. You know, going back to the injuries too, lower body injury, upper body injury,
mid-bod injury.
They don't reveal anything. It's been a boring league for years when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just last year, you know, they've been finally getting into the draft lottery format, all that kind of stuff, to make an event out of this. This is a great opportunity to make an event out of something that's unique that doesn't happen very often. I mean, this expansion draft goes when? Is it June 20th or something like that? So the Stanley Cup will
21st,
have concluded.
But yeah. Yeah.
Sorry?
21st.
Oh, 21st, right.
Yeah.
So the So the final will have concluded right around, I don't know, that week.
Yeah.
Maybe the, whatever, a few days before that. And then the actual draft is coming up a few days after that, then you have free agency on July 1st. So it's an opportunity to kind of just take over the next 2 weeks and have some fun with it. And the problem I have, too, is that if these lists don't go public, is Vegas the only team that's going to know everybody's list?
That's the talk, is that not only will it not be made public to the fans, but that each team
will have given their list to Las Vegas so that they know who to pluck, but they know everybody else's list while other teams don't know anybody else's lists, right?
So a competitive imbalance,
yeah.
a knowledge gap between all 30
so.
NHL teams.
Yeah.
But guys, let's be honest. I mean, for the most part, we know, I would say, with fairly accurate certainty who most teams are going to protect. There's maybe some discussion on one or two players, but especially...
Yeah, but are you sure about that? Because for some teams, it might be a get-out-of-jail-for-free card on a big contract that they don't want anymore.
Sure, that's a good point. That is a good point, Joel. And, you know, when I read what Pierre LeBrun has written about the subject, he's covered it for TSN and ESPN,
yeah.
And he mentioned in his article that he's talked to two general managers, and both of them were fine with the list being revealed, but he says that other general managers have concerns that other teams are going to know how they value and rank players. And then Pierre LeBrun even mentions in
these
the article,
guys,
well, you know how teams value a player by how much they make.
You get 30 general managers into a room. When they're out in Boca Raton or wherever they were for the GM meetings last week, you don't think that these guys just can't keep their mouths shut around one another if their lives depended on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they all know, they talk about who's a dog on their team, who's, you know, living up to their contract, who's exceeding their contract. So don't tell me that these guys are sitting there like they're the world's greatest poker players trying to bluff one another.
It's an incestuous business.
These guys know.
Yeah.
Of course it's an incestuous business. Everybody, you know, you scout for one team because you've scouted previously for another team. You were the GM of one team because you're the assistant GM of a different team. These guys, all they can do is talk to one another.
Mm-hmm.
So don't give me an argument that, you know, they might be able to know who I value more than who I don't value at all.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
If they don't release these lists, Joel, fans are going to go absolutely insane.
Are they?
Well, I think fans want to know who
I mean, by then, I'm over hockey, to be honest with you, just based on how the Stanley Cup playoffs seem to last forever. And by the end of it all right, let's get this over with. So, but come mid-June, I don't really care about hockey anymore. That being said, this is a very unique event that it should be made public so that fans can have some fun
with
it.
And there's only going to be one player chosen from each team. So at the end of the day, fans are going to know who was selected from the Jets. So they're at the very least going to know that player was exposed. But I think fans do want to know who their individual teams value the most. Well, but again, I mean, it's up in the air right now, Drew. They still might reveal these lists. Well, I mean, Bill Daly said that it's still a possibility.
They're now trying to cover their ass. Mm-hmm. They're backtracking because there's been this pushback, from the media primarily and the fans saying, no, you need to make this a spectacle. We want to know this. We want to talk about it from if Vegas gets the list, let's say June 18th. I don't know exactly what date they get the list, have to be submitted off the top of my head, but yeah. I think it's about 3 days earlier.
Yeah.
We want to talk about the list from June 18th through June 21st.
Yeah, and see how many players have been asked to waive their no moves by then, right? Because that's the thing. As much as you said as earlier that these lists are predictable, and in a lot of cases they certainly are based on the numbers, but there may be a lot of teams asking their no move guys to say, hey, do you mind waiving this so we can put you on this list?
Look, the NFL, which is the be-all and end-all of sports in terms of being a 12-month-a-year sport, because they are.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL, right now, people are going crazy about NFL free agency, and they have been for the last 2 weeks, and they dominate the news cycle any month of the year.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the NHL want to take advantage of an infrequent opportunity? Because it's not like expansion drafts come around every year. They come around every 5, every 10, every 15, every 20 years.
Yeah.
Why not take advantage of that and get 3 more days of a news cycle when it's a quiet time between your Stanley Cup finals ending and the actual draft? I mean, all due respect, they publicize the NHL awards like it's some important thing.
Yeah.
So why not try and piggyback and do another important thing and get the publicity necessary?
Well, and Drew, to Joel's point earlier, after the expansion draft, no one's going to care. I mean, after Vegas takes their 30 players, nobody's going to be talking about this. It's just because we're talking about this because it's 3 months before the expansion draft, right?
Yeah.
So after the team is selected, it's not like fans are going to be, demanding that the Winnipeg Jets release their protected list, right?
Yeah.
It's just because,
let's be honest,
right now, the playoffs haven't started. I guarantee you once the playoffs have started, we know the first round of the playoffs is the best time in any sport.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think fans are really going to care. You're going to find out once the player is selected, that guy was exposed. As far as the other guys getting exposed, I think we know, for the most part, which guys are getting protected by the Jets. I think everybody in this room would agree that Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Brian Little are going to be protected.
It's just a chance to give your fans a serious hockey high, a sugar high, whatever you want to call it, by going from the Stanley Cup to the expansion draft to the actual draft and then free agency and then sayonara till the fall.
You're the NHL. You need to do everything in your power to be front and center, not in Winnipeg necessarily, but in a lot of other markets. This is a unique opportunity. Yeah. Take advantage of it. Don't be stupid for once.
Drew, I'd be curious to know the last time there was an expansion draft if the lists were made public.
Social media was not really a thing back then, so
it's a different
kind of skews
it's
it
apples
different.
And oranges.
I mean, you still had newspaper and radio.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
yeah.
I mean, did the fans have access to those lists, or was that private?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. I think it's a little bit of an apples and oranges
scenario. That was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. But nowadays, with social media being what it is, you would want to generate that churn that information, get a buzz going, let people be interested in it. It's already stupid enough that they're not televising the damn thing. They should televise the thing. make a blowout, make a spectacle of it.
I'd rather watch that than the NHL awards. As far as I'm concerned, by the way, I mean, I always follow the NHL awards
because you do this radio show. You have to.
But when you're talking about the NHL awards, I mean, I rarely watch them because all you need to really do is go on the internet, go on NHL.com and
see who won.
You don't need to see, Cuba Gooding Jr. announce the awards.
It's worse than the All-Star game.
Well, there's no carryover. This is actually going to affect teams in the league for the year after and everything else in any event. Corey Long, Tampa Bay Lightning correspondent for NHL.com, joins us next to discuss the Lightning knocking on the door of a playoff spot. We talk Tampa Bay Lightning coming up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Corey Long. Corey is the Tampa Bay Lightning correspondent for NHL.com. Corey, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Corey. Obviously, like I said, brought you on to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. What looked like was going to be a lost season for the Lightning all of a sudden has them tied for the final Eastern Conference playoff spot with the New York Islanders. The Islanders have the spot by virtue of their more regulation and overtime wins. You know, when the trade deadline happened a few weeks ago and the Lightning made a couple deals, dealing away Ben Bishop and dealing away Brian Boyle, did you think that they were sort of not waving the white flag, but maybe quasi-proclaiming that they didn't think they would be able to make it this season? And how surprised are you at this recent run, the 7-2-1 winners of four in a row that has them right on the cusp of a playoff spot?
You know, when they made the trades, it was, it was hard to kind of digest what they were thinking, because at the time, Bishop was really starting to play some of his best hockey of the season. So, you know, there was a part of me in my mind that was saying that he was, I think he had won his last five starts before he got traded. So, you know, I was starting to think, you know, maybe they were going to ride him down the stretch and decide, okay, we're going to go for this. You know, I didn't expect them to make any moves to add any pieces, but, you know, at the time when they were trading him, the thought was that, okay, you know, they're looking, you know, they weren't going to disrupt too much of the core now, but they clearly wanted to clear off some cap space and get some veterans off the squad that had some value elsewhere. And, if something happened, that would have been nice. But at the same time, you were definitely starting to think that they were starting to look towards, you know, the 2017-2018 season and forward.
Corey, we have to ask you about Nikita Kucherov. He's got 31 goals, 69 points in 62 games. When you hear about the Hart Trophy and who might win it this year, you hear Connor McDavid, Sidney Crosby, Brent Burns. You could probably throw in Braden Holtby in there. But do you think more people should be talking about Nikita Kucherov being maybe a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they should be talking about him as just being a phenomenal hockey player having a career season, a year off of having a career season. You know, he's stepped up right now during this time when they needed a leader, when they needed a guy that can put the puck in the net. You know, Steven Stamkos still probably at least a few games away from returning, I would guess. And, I mean, in this period of time, you've got injuries on this roster. There was, after they got rid of Brian Boyle, after they got rid of Phil Pelleau, there was definitely a sense that, you know, this team might be ready to pack it in. And he has shown you with his own skills and his compete level that, you know, he still wants to play. He's a phenomenal player. I think he's one of those guys that can make anybody, you can put him on any line and he's going to make the line better and he's going to produce, of the quote-unquote triplets line, he's the one that's really emerged to be a star beyond just pairing him with Tyler Johnson and Andrej Palat.
Well, speaking of valuable players, from your vantage point, is Victor Hedman getting the league-wide attention he deserves?
Not as much as I think he deserves, especially given, again, you know, you're in a spot where you're without Steven Stamkos. Tyler Johnson's out. That's a lot of scoring right there, and he's had to, not only has he had to remain, you know, keep his integrity on defense, but now they're asking him to take much more of an offensive role, and he gets the overtime winner last night. I think he scored goals in three out of the last four games, if I'm not mistaken. And he's just, he's showing the player in this area that we think he is. We think he's a Norris Trophy type guy year after year, and he's starting to show that now. I mean, he's long, he's got that reach, he's tremendous on the power play, he's a great locker room leader, his intensity level is really, you don't always think about that when you think of Swedish players, but his intensity level, when it's really gotten ratcheted up in the last two or three weeks.
You're listening to NHL This Week. Our guest is Corey Long. Corey is the Tampa Bay Lightning correspondent for NHL.com. Corey, we mentioned the Ben Bishop trade, which of course happened right before the trade deadline, giving Andrei Vasilevsky the majority of the starts since then. He's 5-0-1 in those six starts that he's had since Ben Bishop was traded. He's got a .954 save percentage and a 1.45 goals against average. In short, he's been on absolute fire since the Bishop trade. Was the Bishop deal and the sort of the vote of confidence that came hand in hand with it, has that contributed to Vasilevsky and his improved play as of late?
I think it's a couple of things. I do think that, you know, I don't want to sound like there was any friction between the two. They were very, Vasilevsky called Bishop his big brother, and they were very close, and it hurt. When Bishop left, because everybody loved him, the guys that covered the team included. He was a great guy. I think maybe Vasilevsky needed that space, though. You know what I'm saying? He needed that question answered. Well, did they really believe in him as a number one guy? And now that I think that he found that they believe him as a number one guy, he wants to prove that he's a number one guy. He struggled a lot, before this recent run, and some of that was bad luck. Some of that was, he just wasn't getting the pucks like he should be. I think it was the Calgary game, if I'm not mistaken, that they lost, that you really saw the frustration that he had come to a head. And then the trade happened not too long after that, and now you see the type of play that he has. But this is what he's capable of. I mean, he's the hardest worker on the team, a highly respected young man. He wants to be a big game performer. He likes the idea that basically they're playing playoff games right now. He wants that pressure. I think he got a little taste of it last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, he went in the offseason knowing that he could do better than what he did in that series last year. So, right now I think he's looking at this like they're in the playoffs, that the Lightning are in the playoffs right now, and every night he just wants to win.
Corey, Braden Point played his junior hockey 6 hours west of us here, of course, with the Moose Jaw Warriors. He's got 3 goals in his last 2 games. What's impressed you most about the rookie forward?
Just the fact that he stepped on a team that was pretty well established. Their 4 lines were pretty established when he came into training camp. He worked his way. He worked his way in, and it meant that Eric Condra had to end up in Syracuse, where he's been most of the season. And now, then he worked his way into really being a top 6 forward on this team. I love watching him play. I think he consistently makes smart decisions with the puck. He takes pride in trying to be a two-way player. He's not a big guy, but he's able to win pucks. He's able to figure out ways. He gets in the creases. He gets in front of the net. He just, he's just willing to do whatever it takes to contribute. And I think that's won him the respect of the locker room. It's won him the love of the fan base who, he's a young guy. He's a good-looking guy. So everybody, everybody loves him. But, I just think that I'm mostly impressed by the fact that he plays well above his age. He just turned 21, but he makes plays that that a veteran in his prime would make. His hockey IQ is tremendous.
Any updates from sick bay right now, specifically with number 91?
I predicted my day in the pool was that he was actually going to play tomorrow. Being Toronto, hometown team, that was always my day in the office pool. My issue with that might be that they haven't, because they're off today, they're off before they started the back-to-back, that they might want them to go through a full contact practice before they put them out for a game. So with that being said, anything from tomorrow, you got the Capitals on Saturday, the next week, I think between tomorrow and the end of next week, Stamkos will be back out on the ice.
Corey, we'll let you go with this last question. Entering into the trade deadline, the Tampa Bay Lightning had salary cap issues, and the conventional wisdom was that those salary cap issues might cost them one of Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, or Jonathan Drouin next season when they all become, or they're all eligible for new contracts, they're all RFAs. Lo and behold, Steve Yzerman does some magic, he gets rid of the contracts of Valtteri Filppula in particular, that was the big one. Does that move by Yzerman make it more likely that you could see a situation where both Johnson, Palat, and Drouin all return to the team next season?
I think they could. I've always been of the belief that they want to sign Drew and they want to sign Palat. I think Johnson might be the odd man out because the feeling is that they've got other players that can fill his role. I believe Braden Point, was if he would have spent all year in the AHL, was going to be penciled as one of the guys that could have filled his role next season. So, you know, things have changed a little bit, but there's Matthew Pekka down there. They've got, you know, there's guys that can fill his role. He's getting a little older. I think the style of play that Tyler plays is not going to be good for his body in the long term. So a lot of that just depends on how they want to evaluate things. But I can say that Palat and Drew, and my belief is that those are the two top priorities. And obviously, if you can get Johnson as well, that's, you know, he's a great guy for the market. He's a fan favorite. So, you know, in order just to, you know, in order to appease your fan base, and because he's still a very good player, you'd want to have him back as well. But I think Palat and Drew are really the two guys that, you know, if I had to rate them 1, 2, and 3, it'd be Drew and Palat, then Johnson.
Corey Long covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for NHL.com. Corey, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Take care.
Take care, Corey. We'll do it again soon. Let's head to break. When we return, we're going to discuss Ben Raby. He covers the Washington Capitals. He's got a very interesting must-win playoff game proposal. Talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ben Raby is a journalist in Washington who covers the Washington Capitals. He's been a frequent guest on this program. He has a very interesting proposal regarding the NHL and its playoff format. We're going to go through that proposal. You guys can give me your feedback on what you think about it. It sort of takes into account the excitement that has been generated by Major League Baseball with their wild card play-in game. We all know that sort of game 163 on the schedule where those two teams will battle for the right to enter into the divisional series.
Love it in baseball.
Jays won it last year, of course.
Of course, the Jays won it. They beat the Orioles in that extra inning epic.
Yeah. You know, Zach Britton.
Zach Britton's still on the bench for the Orioles. I believe he's still at Rogers Center. I'm not 100% sure. But this is Ben's proposal. So Ben, first of all, he says that you get rid of the sort of in-division format that we currently have, mm-hmm. where that has sort of become more universally disliked because of the imbalance it creates, particularly this year with the Metropolitan Division.
And specifically the New York Rangers, who might end up having the fourth most points in the Eastern Conference and being in the first wildcard spot.
Exactly. So what Ben says is you return to conference seeding for the postseason. The divisional champions get first and second seed. So you win a division, you're going to either be the first seed or the second seed. Doesn't matter if, you know, the second place team in Division A has more points than the Division B winner. And then on the first two nights of the playoffs, on the Tuesday night and the Wednesday night after the end of the regular season, you have a play-in game with the seventh seed and playing against the 10th seed in each conference and the eighth seed playing against the ninth seed in each conference. So basically, if you finish top six in the conference, you're guaranteed to play in a seven-game series. But if you finish from 7 through 10,
yeah,
you have to compete in that play-in game for the right to play in a seven-game playoff series. So here's Ben's thinking. If your team is an 11th or 12th place in the final few weeks of the season, there's still a chance to earn a berth in the must-win game. That's what he calls it. Doesn't right. call it the play-in game. He says it's the must-win game. So that way, you know, a team like the Winnipeg Jets, who are a long shot to finish in the top eight right now, could, you know, top 10 is within striking distance for that chance to get into the must-win game.
Right, so in theory, the Vancouver Canucks, who are in 11th,
yes,
chasing the Jets, 2 points behind, actually have something to play for.
Correct. You increase, the second point that Ben makes is you increase the value of finishing within the top six in the conference because that guarantees a berth in the best of seven conference quarterfinals. Makes sense? You finish seventh, you don't really get much of a reward. You have to play in the must-win game. You finish sixth, you're guaranteed at least a best of seven series. there is potentially greater reward for winning the division and finishing with the number one or number two seed in the conference. Say, for example, the number 10 seed beats the number 7 seed in the must-win game. That would mean the number one seed would face the number 10 seed in the conference quarterfinals, as opposed to facing the number 8 seed under the old format. So a bigger advantage, a bigger disparity in talent, a bigger reward for finishing first or second overall in the conference. There is also the potential for more teams to earn home playoff gates. The number 7 and number 8 seeds would host the do-or-die must-win game. That means those teams are guaranteed at least one home playoff game. The last one is about nationally televised doubleheaders on the Tuesday and Wednesday, factoring in the TV and the eyeballs sort of thing. Your thoughts on Ben's proposal? Could you see the NHL adopting this? Do you like what Ben is suggesting as a way to maybe add some extra interest for those teams that are finished are somewhere between, say, 7th and 13th down the stretch?
Yeah, well, first of all, I have no idea if the NHL would consider this. I can say that it's a very interesting idea, and I think it would provide for a very exciting last couple weeks of the regular season in addition to the start of the playoffs, right? Like, if you kick off the playoffs with the 7th seed playing the 10th seed and the 8th seed playing the 9th seed, I mean, that would be a fantastic way to kick off the first round. I personally don't think that there's anything currently wrong with just having the first round start the way it does.
Yeah.
But what I do have a problem with, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show this year, Drew, I don't like the current playoff format. Michael Trakos wrote about it today for the National Post. It's absolutely ridiculous for the New York Rangers, a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, to be in the first wild card spot.
Well,
that's got to change.
I'll tell you what. I'm not even upset if I'm the Rangers. I'm upset if I'm the division winner that has to play them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real disadvantage. It's not the Rangers that end up having to start on the road wherever they're going because they're the fourth best team in the East.
It's going to be the winner of the Atlantic
that
plays the
Rangers.
It's the
fact that you're a division winner and you're now facing a team that is I don't even know what the discrepancy is in points right now between the Rangers and the winner of the Atlantic, but I'm sure it's not much.
I think it's at least
the Rangers have 90 points. The Montreal Canadiens have 86 points.
So there you go. The Montreal Canadiens winning their division get to host the wild card winning New York Rangers, who are better than them.
Right.
That's the part. It's not even the Rangers that I feel bad for. It's the division winner.
I thought you were talking about the discrepancy between the Rangers and the third place team in the Atlantic, the Bruins and the Rangers.
No,
there's 10 points. Right. There's a difference of 4 points between the Rangers and the Canadiens. But to your point,
the Canadiens that will host them.
Right. Do you want to win the Atlantic division? Like, congratulations, Montreal. You're playing the Rangers in the first round.
That's what I'm saying. That's why when you say you feel bad for the Rangers, I feel bad for the division winner having to play a stacked
team. No, I do too.
Like, yeah.
I do too. But I also it's more so that it's absurd, right?
Yeah. But this is also, I mean, the same thing happened last year in the West.
Yep.
You know, now this year happens to be the East.
But back to the idea put forward by Ben Raby, I mean, absolutely. I mean, whether you look in the East or the West, we were using the West as an example. Right now, what do the Dallas Stars have to play for? The Dallas Stars are not making the playoffs, but under this idea, they're 3 points behind the Jets with a game in hand. So the Dallas Stars have a reason to still win games because they still might have an opportunity to play in a wild card game. So I think it would be exciting, Drew, but as far as whether or not we're actually going to see this happen, I have no idea. But
I hope
that at the very least the playoff format changes. I think they should go back to just having the division winners finish 1-2 and then the rest of the teams get ranked regardless of which division they're in.
Why not just 1-8?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Go back to what it was like before 2012.
Sure, when they had they had the three divisions then and everything else. And I get it about the 1-8 and everything else, and that's better than this current system because the disparity and the competitive imbalance between one division and another is too damaging come playoff team.
Well, Drew, sorry to cut you off, but I mean, you've talked about this before. Pittsburgh and Washington right now, 1-2 in the East based on points.
Yeah, they're going to meet in the second round.
Right.
It could mean the second round.
You'd ideally want to see them meet in the third round.
What I like about...
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. You'd want to see them meet in the conference championship.
Right.
So if they're the two best teams in the conference, they should meet in the conference championship. And what I like about Ben's idea is that it actually does reward a team for finishing in the top six. You know, it rewards you. You get that... You get a longer break, let's say, between the end of the regular season and the start of the playoffs. You play a tired opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right now I don't think that the reward is significant enough for finishing as one of the best teams in the conference. I think that you should have a more tangible effect. And yeah, I understand that no one's clamoring to see a team like the Dallas Stars, you know, be in the playoffs, and that you can make the argument that if you're not top eight, you don't deserve to be there. But, you know, really, there's not a huge difference in my mind between finishing seventh and finishing ninth. Let's let those teams battle it out a little bit more. You finish seventh, I'm not sure why that automatically means you should get the same sort of chance as a team that finishes third.
Yeah, it's a good point. Not to mention, I mean, some of the teams that have been battling injuries all season long, you touched on the Stars, the Lightning, like we just talked about last segment, this gives them a chance to kind of stay in that race. Lightning might get in top eight anyways, but after battling all these injuries, if you end up finishing ninth because you're without your goalie or star players throughout the year, now you still have a sniff and a chance at it. Now what are we at, though? 20 teams that have a chance at the postseason? I mean,
yeah,
there's already 16 teams.
But I don't consider 7 through 10 in this instance, I don't consider them really playoff teams. They can try and spin that to their fans and everything else, but the playoff teams, from my perspective, are really the teams that finish 1 through 6 in each conference, and then the teams that win the must-win game. Good on you for winning that game, but you're not truly I wouldn't describe you as being a real true playoff team, quote-unquote.
I see your point, but remember, back in 2012, where did the Kings finish?
They finished eighth.
Right? So, I mean, once you get in, Drew,
you
always have a chance. All you need is a chip, right?
But I would argue that the reward for the Vancouver, they played the Canucks in the first round back in 2012, right? The Kings did.
Yeah, Canucks, Blues, and then did they beat the Coyotes in the conference final?
I don't remember exactly who they beat.
Canucks, Blues, Coyotes, I think.
My point was that it wasn't a big enough reward for the team that finished first overall in the conference to have to meet that Los Angeles Kings team, you know, as the eighth place team in the conference.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more of a reward if you face that LA Kings team or any other team that has then had to play this extra, you know, must win game, this do or die battle. They have to leave it all on the ice. You know, you saw it with the Jays. The Jays are barely able to, you know, barely able to squeak by the Baltimore Orioles. And then what happens? I believe they lost the first two games against the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, I might be wrong on that front.
But they had champagne after winning that wild card game.
Well, the players will like it. More champagne for the players then, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mind the idea. It'd be tough to get the governors to sign off on that one, I guess, because now you have two spots that are not guaranteed when it comes to postseason and big bucks on the line right there, right?
Well,
when your team is always maybe a bubble playoff team and now you're up in that little four-team tournament.
Well, what the problem is, the seventh and eighth place teams are currently only guaranteed, they're guaranteed two home playoff games under the current format. You know, if they were to get swept, if they lose in five, they'd only get two home playoff games. So now you're asking them to the risk of only having one home playoff game instead.
I would have no problem with this, Drew, as long as they get rid of this current playoff format.
Well, food for thought. We'll see if the NHL ever thinks outside
the
box. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it for giving a premium on finishing in the top six in the conference. That's what I like most about it. I don't really care.
How exciting would those wild card games be?
It would be sudden death overtime.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's sudden death overtime for 60 minutes. Anyways, Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News joins us next. We'll talk about the NHL, the season, the playoff races, maybe touch on some prospects as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the app. Ascend 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Joel Marcoux, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program from the Hockey News, Ryan Kennedy joins us now. Ryan, good evening, and thanks very much for doing this.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Ryan. You know, you wrote recently about the New York Rangers, and it's sort of a fascinating story, the Rangers, as we sit here on March 15th, and they're obviously a playoff team, you know, coming through the Metropolitan Division, but right now they're actually just in a wild card spot, despite being the fourth best team in the Atlantic Division. are they in the best spot possible, given that they get the Montreal Canadiens in the first round, as opposed to avoiding the juggernaut Penguins or Capitals? Or do you think that maybe this Rangers team being in that position, it's a bit of fool's gold right now?
Well, they still have to win the games. And, I mean, that's going to be the big challenge, you know. I mean, we've seen it last year where the Islanders, it kind of seemed like they put themselves in a position to play Florida in the first round, and they did end up beating the Panthers. But, you know, the Rangers have to be careful because you don't want to give teams any more motivation than they need. And, you know, as you mentioned, Montreal with Carey Price, you always have a chance to win. Something to also consider, even though the Atlantic is clearly the weaker of the two divisions, is what if Tampa Bay sneaks into that bracket somehow? I guess they would more likely be playing against the Metro, but, you know, eventually you're going to have to play some good teams, whether it's in the Atlantic or the Metro. I think the key for the Rangers is just to try to get their game honed. You know, Lundqvist is obviously out for a couple of weeks. Once he gets back, he needs to get primed for action because he's been so good for them in the playoffs in the past. But it's interesting because their window is closing, that's for sure. But I do think they have at least somewhat of a shot.
Ryan, the Leafs got slaughtered last night by the Florida Panthers 7-2, and they have a big game.
They did? I didn't read anything about that at all. I had no idea that the Leafs lost last night. I thought the world ended or something instead.
That's cute, Drew. Ryan, they play the Lightning tomorrow night, and that's obviously a big game. The Leafs are currently 1 point behind the Lightning, also 1 point behind the Islanders, who are holding down that last wild card spot. When you look at the Leafs' schedule, it's not going to be easy. Do you think this team has it in them to get into the playoffs and get that last spot, or is this just too soon right now and this team is too young and you know, it's going to be a little bit too hard for them with the Lightning looking like they're primed to take that playoff spot?
I think it's going to be tricky. That Florida game, it seemed like kind of a must-win situation, and obviously it couldn't have gone worse. I think, you know, a couple of problems. Nikita Zaitsev had a horrible game. He needs to rebound, but again, you know, he's a rookie defenseman in the NHL. It's not an easy position to play, and they're expecting pretty solid minutes from him. And, you know, for most of the season, it's gone fine, but, I mean, this is crunch time. And, you know, this is when teams really have to come together and they kind of get forged by fire. I think it's all great experience for the young Leafs. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa had a similarly convincing win. I'm not saying it's going to be 7-2, but, I mean, the Lightning, despite all their injuries, they seem to be in a much better headspace than the Leafs are right now. And they could easily capitalize on a team that is facing a lot of adversity. Basically for the first time, because all of a sudden there is expectation around them, and I think it's going to be a very interesting finish for them.
Yeah, tough sked, Lightning, Hawks, Bruins. Speaking of the Bruins, should Brad Marchand be in the Hart Trophy conversation right now?
I think he's a good candidate. He doesn't leap to mind. I know his stats are really good lately. I think a lot of credit goes to, you know, David Pastrnak as well, and the incredible season he's had for them. I think it all plays together. For me, I think you're looking at Connor McDavid as the guy, just because of how he's lifted up that Oilers squad with some assistance from Cam Talbot. But I would say if you're looking at, you know, the most valuable player, to me it's still McDavid, and then, you know, tossing Crosby as well and what he consistently does for Pittsburgh. Marchand, it's a great story, and I mean, going all the way back to the World Cup, you know, in the fall, he's been amazing. I just, maybe he'll get some votes, but I kind of feel like he's on another tier right now below those guys.
Ryan Kennedy, our guest on NHL This Week. Ryan is with the Hockey News. Ryan, the Ottawa Senators or the Calgary Flames, which one of those two Canadian teams is a more realistic Stanley Cup threat?
I would say the Flames. I don't have a whole lot of faith in either team, to be honest with you. Ottawa, it's very difficult to figure out how they win, other than Erik Karlsson is very good, you know? and they tend to get scoring from different sources when they need it. I think Calgary, at least structurally, when you look at them, it makes a little more sense. Having said that, you know, they would have to go through a San Jose or an Anaheim, and then obviously the Hawks or the Preds or the Wild or whoever comes out, of the Central. So I think they'd have a harder path, but I think Ottawa is probably going to get exposed pretty quickly in the playoffs, depending on the matchup they get.
Ryan, I wanted to switch to prospects here for a second. You're the prospects expert, of course, for the Hockey News. A lot of talk this year, of course. Nolan Patrick from Winnipeg, Manitoba, he's projected to go first overall in the 2017 draft. You wrote about Cody Glass last month. Cody Glass is also from Winnipeg. He's got 94 points in 68 games this year. Is Cody Glass a potential top 10 pick, and what do you think he projects to at the NHL level?
Well, here's the comparison that I've been making, and I think you'll probably enjoy it being in Winnipeg. I see Cody Glass as this year's Mark Scheifele, not particularly in terms of style, but what I see in Glass is a player that no one was talking about before the year began. He really just sort of like rocketed up the charts. He's got a 6'2" frame. He's still kind of skinny, but that's like the easiest problem to fix with the prospect. You can always feed them more. You can always get them on a particular diet plan to get them to bulk up, but his hockey sense, his hands, his playmaking ability are fantastic. I see Glass as a player where if there's a team that really believes in him, like Winnipeg did with Scheifele, he could go a bit earlier than expected. So is top 10 possible? Certainly. If he should fall to, 15, I wouldn't be shocked. Teams obviously have their favorites. They might want defensemen, that sort of thing. But I think this is a player that, he's already really good. Next year, I think we'll see some incredible stats, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him play a key role for Team Canada at the World Juniors.
Staying on these prospects for the upcoming draft, where are we at right now with Nolan versus Nico?
I think it's tightening. Just from talking to teams, it's not a year where when you talk to scouts, they say, oh, no, Patrick's for sure now. It's not a McDavid Matthews kind of year. I think he's probably still the front runner. One thing to keep an eye out on is, Hoosiers, Halifax, Mooseheads are kind of life and death to make the playoffs right now in the Quebec League. And that'll be tough. Now, they are a young team. Nolan Patrick obviously has a better surrounding cast, and Brandon will go farther. But in terms of points per game, they're pretty similar right now. I'm almost wondering if it comes down to team preference where, Nolan Patrick is the guy you can put in every situation. I was watching the Wee Kings the other night, whether it's killing penalties, 4-on-4, even strength, he's out there taking the draw. With Hischier, obviously, you're getting a little more flash. A player closer to a Nikolai Ehlers, who also came out of Halifax, doesn't have the same size as Patrick. But, we saw what he did at the World Juniors. It was pretty outstanding. So I think this is definitely something to keep an eye on as we get closer to the draft, because it truly is up in the air.
Ryan Kennedy, our guest on the NHL this week here on TSN 1290. Ryan, if you look at the Western Conference playoff standings, the LA Kings 4 points behind the Blues, Blues still with the game in hand. Are the current 8 playoff teams in the West going to be there at the end of the season, or do you think the Kings have one last run in them?
I'm not sure. I think the way they've been playing lately doesn't give me a ton of faith, and it's similar to the Toronto situation where there's games where you say, okay, well, if they can win this one, then they're in a lot better shape, and then they lose that game, and all of a sudden the mountain's that much bigger to climb. For whatever reason, whether it's the Jonathan Quick injury or just a core that is no longer really suited to how teams are winning in the NHL, it just seems like Los Angeles has sort of lost its mojo. Jeff Carter notwithstanding, he's still having a pretty good year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they missed. And then your problem is, what do you do with this team that is pretty entrenched in terms of contracts?
Ryan, there's a lot of talk in Winnipeg and obviously Toronto as well about the Calder Trophy race centered around Patrick Laine and Austin Matthews, and you can throw in Mitch Marner in there as well, even though Matthews and Laine are usually the two guys that are brought up the most. But I'm not going to ask you who you think is the favorite right now, but as someone who covers prospects, to see all of these prospects now in the NHL, and you can throw in Zach Werenski in there, you can throw in Sebastian Aho in there, you can throw Matt Murray in there. How fun is it for you personally to watch this Calder Trophy race? And it's not just forwards, but you've got a defenseman in there, you've got a goaltender in there who's in the conversation. Just how much are you enjoying that this year?
Oh, I'm loving it. It's fantastic. And being based in Toronto, obviously, I get to see all the Maple Leafs rookies, but you know, it's funny. I actually wrote a blog not too long ago about Matthew Tkachuk and how any other year he's probably a favorite to win the Calder. One of the best possession players in the league, really driving, you know, Calgary's most effective line with Frolik and Backlund. But he's not even really going to get a sniff at the Calder this year because we have these phenoms. You know, because like Matt Murray is still Calder eligible, Zach Werenski is breaking all sorts of records in Columbus, and then of course Laine and Matthew, and then Marner, you know, is sort of a hip pick as well. It's just really fun. And I mean, the great thing is we're going to see these kids play each other for years now. You know, you think about all the great rivalries, even if they're not really organic, it's fun every time Laine plays Matthews. It's fun every time McDavid plays Eichel. It's fun every time that Matthews plays Eichel because they used to be teammates internationally. So all these great, you know, storylines are emerging. And as these guys get entrenched and become even more important to their teams, it's just so much fun. They all have so much skill.
Ryan, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned Jack Eichel. You wrote about him a few weeks back. You know, nobody's talking about him because the Sabres are having a lousy year, and he was injured for such a large portion of the year. But, you know, almost a point-a-game player, if he can ever stay healthy, is he going to be the, you know, breakout star next year for those who haven't really been paying attention?
You know what? That's a pretty good point. I think people are starting to see what he's doing this year, but again, he's going to be overshadowed by McDavid, who, you know, might win the Hart, might win the Art Ross, and obviously with Matthews and Laine up for the Calder, you know, he's been a little bit out of the spotlight. But as that Buffalo team gets better, and I mean, they should over the summer, they can make some moves. I think Eichel's going to take his place in that upper echelon of top players, and again, it's just super fun. There's so many great under 23 players in the league right now, and that's where the NHL is headed in terms of their stars. Eichel is definitely going to put his stamp on something there in Buffalo.
Ryan Kennedy covers the NHL. He covers prospects for the Hockey News. Ryan, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Do it again soon. Take care, Ryan. Let's head to break. One final segment coming up on the other side. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment on this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show comes to you Saturday, 9 a.m. on this fine radio station. Want to give a big shout-out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. These fine businesses, fine local businesses, all support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Happy birthday shout-out to Keener.
There you go.
It was his birthday yesterday.
There you go.
Yep.
Did you get him a jersey cake?
That's funny.
Thank you. That's the last time. That's the first and last time I've been funny on this week's show.
No, you're funny. I'd say once every 5 months.
I appreciate that, but you know, absence.
6 months.
You know what they say: as the absence makes the heart grow fonder. So I've been away, you know, for a week. So now you know we're back together.
Yep.
You know, reunited, and it feels so good. I'll promise never to sing again. You know, I miss Desi. I missed Desi.
I'm glad to have you back.
I RSVP'd to his wedding this while I was away.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, I think it was funny there. I sent a. You asked me about food allergies for the dinner charts.
See, I don't see those because they go to Naomi's email address.
Oh well. So what happened was they get any food allergies to be concerned about, dietary restrictions. And
yeah,
I said,
so you went off on that?
No. Well, I said I'm typically allergic to Ezzy, but I'll make an exception for the wedding,
yep.
And try and be in attendance and that sort of thing. But.
Yep.
Looking That's forward
not bad.
To it. Yeah, thank you.
It's not great, but it's not bad.
It's twice. Yeah, twice. Two sort of funny things, one bad singing impression. It's all good, right?
Yep.
Yeah, anyways. big thank you to those fine companies, as I was saying. They support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, so you should support them as well.
Super Troopers coming up at Rumors as well.
Yeah, the Super Trooper guys with Super Troopers 2 coming out. Coming out imminently. Rumors just booked the guys from Super
Littering
Troopers.
End.
Kevin Heffernan
Littering
and Steve
end.
Lemmy. April 27th through 29th. I know tickets are going real quick already. So if you enjoyed Super Troopers, if you enjoy Super Troopers 2, you should get on that real quick.
Well, I was actually thinking of bringing the Funyuns to see Super Troopers.
You should. It's all in keeping with the appropriate actions.
And obviously a liter of cola.
A liter, it's what the Super Troopers are all about. Anyways, a quick conversation here as we wrap up against the clock here about the Norris Trophy race. For the longest time, it was pretty much a sure thing. Mm-hmm. It was Brent Burns' Norris Trophy to win. All of a sudden, watch out for Erik Karlsson. He's making a tremendous run on this Ottawa Senators team that nobody's talking about. And Karlsson,
actually, we talked about them on Saturday's show.
Fine. But
you obviously weren't listening.
I clearly was not listening. That is correct. I was not listening. I was enjoying the sunshine of Scottsdale. Yeah. I saw one Coyotes hat. That was the extent. I was in Phoenix for a week.
One.
There was a guy wearing a Coyotes hat. That was it. He may or may not have been homeless. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, there's the one Coyotes hat. That's
it. It's a sad state of affairs with the Coyotes in Arizona.
It is. There was not, I was there while Bettman put out the letter saying that, we need a new arena, to keep this team viable, and the arena has to be in downtown Phoenix in that area. There was not an outcry of support. They were not taking to the streets to rally for the Coyotes while they
get out of there. Seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Like, why are the Coyotes still there even?
Well,
put them in Seattle, put them in Quebec City.
It's funny. I don't know that they would be an unmitigated disaster if two things. One, if the arena was more centrally located, because Glendale is far away from everything. I mean, it truly is.
They've got to be a winning team, though, Drew.
And they have to be a winning team.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I don't care if you put the arena in somebody's backyard. If they're playing a lousy brand of hockey, and it's a chicken or the egg argument oftentimes, we can't spend any money on players because, nobody comes to our games, and nobody comes to our games because we can't spend money on
any team.
Because we can't spend money on any players.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a chicken and egg catch-22 situation, but things would think at this point in time quickly coming to a head there.
Getting back to the Norris Trophy.
Yeah, Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, that's what I was going to say.
And you can never count Erik Karlsson out of the Norris Trophy discussion, right? I do think that Brent Burns is going to end up winning the Norris Trophy,
and I
think he deserves to. But the interesting thing about Erik Karlsson, guys, is that he's a better all-around defenseman, I think, now under Guy Boucher.
Yeah.
And I think Guy Boucher doesn't get enough credit.
He leads the league in blocked shots.
That's the most incredible part.
I'll say this much. If Guy Boucher is not a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy, then
they should get rid of
voting? I mean, come on. I mean, the guy has done an unbelievable job, and Glenn Gullitson has done a great job. I mean, there's a lot of coaches that deserve consideration for the Jack Adams. Barry Trotz is another one of them. But when you're talking about Erik Karlsson, he's blocking more shots, he's playing less, and he's playing better defensively. Yeah. And that's what we've always said, about the Norris Trophy, is that it should go to the best all-around defenseman.
Well,
last year, Erik Karlsson had the most points, Joel, but Drew Doughty won it. I personally think Drew Doughty is the best defenseman in the game, so I was very happy to see Drew Doughty win it. This year, Brent Burns, I mean, you can't deny the point totals that he's putting up. He's got 70 points. He might end up with 80. So, but it is going to be an interesting race because Erik Karlsson, we expect to be a finalist for the Norris Trophy, but certainly he's having another great year.
And I know, Bobby Orr, I know he changed the game on the way you play defense, putting up points and all that kind of stuff, and one hell of a player. Is it not time that we maybe implement some sort of trophy to honor Bobby Orr so that you have the Bobby Orr Trophy so that you can go back to giving the Norris Trophy to maybe a defensive defenseman? Not saying these guys aren't defensive, because they certainly are, and it's impressive to see. But at the same time, Brent Burns is getting it simply because of his point total right now.
Well, I've said this before.
27 goals. He's going to crack 30. Yep. He's in the Art Ross conversation, for crying out loud. It's so impressive. But that being said, over the years, we've ignored some very good defensemen simply for the fact that they're not putting up points. I mean, we talked about it a few segments ago. Victor Hedman is having one hell of a year.
Yep.
He's already at 59 points. 59 points. And he's not even in the conversation.
I think if you're talking about the best shutdown defenseman in the league, I think it's Mark-Edward Vlasic. He's only got 21 points. But if you're talking about the best defensive defenseman,
Yeah.
I mean, he was on Team Canada. I mean, we know how good he is, but he doesn't put up the point totals that Brent Burns puts up. But as far as I'm concerned, Mark Edward Vlasic is a top 10 defenseman.
And sure,
league.
Maybe the player ends up winning both, kind of like the Hart and the Ted Lindsay. You know, a lot of players win both. Maybe you have the Bobby Orr and the Norris, and most of the time it's a double dip anyways.
Right.
But, you know, some pretty good defensemen aren't getting any consideration because of their lack of point production.
Will be something to monitor as we head into towards the end of the regular season. Big thank you to our guests on today's program, Arthur Staple of Newsday, the Tampa Bay Lightning correspondent for NHL.com, and Ryan Kennedy of the Hockey News. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and also via our website, IllegalCurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, and our Facebook page is Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. For Joel Marcoux and for Ezra Ginsberg, a big props to producer Alex for doing a great job behind the board. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we wish you good night and good luck.